Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Thursday, 14 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Mateta Tolari, U.S. strength. We're looking at the U.S. dollar index, and it's at 20-year highs. As dollar-euro hits parity for the first time in 20 years. What's the story with the dollar? Martin Ackerman from Citadel, that horror U.S. inflation number, 9.1% for June. Even core inflation moved higher. More rates. I mean, suddenly there's talk of a 1% increase at the NPC, at the FOMC meeting in 2 weeks' time. And then Elise Kruger, talking on the Bank of Africa Economic Transactions Index, it actually shows a fairly strong Q2, albeit there are some headwinds coming ahead. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. FSCA tells Veracity Markets to stop trading. Remember, we chatted around these ODP licenses for the CFD providers, maybe 2 months or so back, and they don't have one, so they've been shut down. The article claims 400,000 accounts in South Africa. I don't buy that. Maybe globally, not locally. And then from Fin24, Reserve Bank to declare crypto a financial product, enabling trade on local exchanges. This is going to take some time. It will probably only happen second half of next year. Of course, it trades on local exchanges, Revix, Luno. What they mean is the like of A2X, JSC, and the like. Morning markets, US was red overnight, S&P off 0.5%, Nasdaq down 0.1%, Asia's green, Sydney up 0.4%, and Turkey up 0.7%. Commodities mostly green overnight, gold $1,731, Brent $100.12 an ounce, a barrel rather, platinum $935 an ounce, palladium, the red on the screen, 1,983. Rand a little stronger, 16.95. Top 40 opening call about 100 points to the green. That's about 0.15%. That as 10 cent trades basically flat in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Standing now with Mateta Tolari, head of FX execution at RMB. Mateta, appreciate the early morning time. I've been watching this U.S. index chart, and since about June of last year, it's been slowly creeping higher. Now trading at, and if I zoom my chart out quickly, pretty much this chart here. I mean, back at early 2000 levels, we're also seeing euro at parity or almost at parity again for the first time in 20 odd years. What's happening here? What's driving what is significant dollar strength?
Good morning, Simon. And I suppose the euro's descent this year is just one part of a global story of really dollar dominant, as you say. I mean, the dollar has been in favor this year as a safe haven investment, obviously helped by what you said earlier. I mean, high U.S. interest rates, and obviously there's speculation that, you know, the rally could spur even global policymakers to intervene, to weaken it at some point. But I mean, the euro, if you think about it, it's the currency for about 19 countries and about 340 million people. And it's had its ups and downs since it began in 1999. I mean, if you think about it, in its early days, it was about 85 cents against the dollar, which obviously led about its viability. And even there were predictions about its demise. But I suppose if you think about it, this year it suffered a very swift and brutal slump. And I think now it's crossed the major threshold for the first time in more than two decades. As you say, obviously we, you know, at parity. And obviously the 12% decline is a result of multiple pressures that we've seen globally. I mean, the war in Eastern Europe with regards to the war in Ukraine, obviously to an energy crisis, and the growing risk that, you know, Russia could potentially cut gas exports. And obviously this could push the euro area into a recession. So if you add that and also, you know, central banks moving at vastly different speeds and obviously very much in demand dollar speculation at this point in time, and obviously the increasing Federal Reserve that has really charged the dollar, you know, it is creating a rate differential that will obviously keep the euro under pressure.
Yeah, and I suppose I take your point as well. As you know, in a world of uncertainty and rising rates, taking money into the U.S. and buying, you know, I don't know, treasuries or something, you know, that's not the worst idea. And it is that sort of, you know, when we're worried about stuff, wars and the like, well, U.S. dollars, your classic safe haven.
Exactly. I mean, but if you think about it also, you know, this kind of spells trouble for consumers in the 12 trillion euro economy. I mean, that's feeding an inflation spike that's already out of control, with prices, you know, rising at a record pace at close to 9%. You know, that obviously tells you the big eye that we've been speaking about, which is inflation and interest rates. So, you know, the depreciation has been incredibly rapid. And obviously, if you think about it, just 5 months ago in February, the euro was trading at 1.15 against the dollar. But it's remarkable because, you know, given that less than 2 years ago, you know, ECB policymakers were concerned about the excessive euro strength that led to an inflation undershoot. Now they're confronted with a very different world where you've got a dramatic plunge in the euro and obviously a rising inflation and consumer prices. So already some ECB policymakers are starting to signal that the weakness is on their minds, especially when it comes to the imported inflation and also the dual inflation recession threats. So obviously it looks like now the ECB is having to deal with the risk of sovereign borrowing costs also diverging as much as, you know, they're on course for this reverse in stimulus. So it just shows you that it's a really dramatic world, and obviously the past, you know, call it 5 months with the start of the Eastern European geopolitical tension has just shown that it's thrown the world into a lot of chaos.
Yeah, I like that phrase. It's a dramatic world. And we thought 2022 was going to be a nice sort of restful year after 2 years of pandemic. Mateta Tulari, Head FX Execution at RMB, appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Martin Ackerman, Chief Economist and Advisory Partner at Citadel. Martin, appreciate the early morning. U.S. inflation data came out yesterday afternoon. The consensus was for a rise in the headline inflation, a slight improvement in the core inflation. Both went higher than expected. This inflation story in the U.S. is looking rough, and my sense is that the Federal Reserve looking perhaps more and more behind the curve.
Morning, Simon. Yes, you're right. A monster number, 9.1, versus an expectation of 8.8, another 40-year high. But we need to keep in mind that this is history, looking back with these numbers. And I got the feeling that we're very close to the turning point. Nevertheless, it is a number that the Fed need to be concerned about. And, you know, they will continue hiking rates to address this. The market is now really speculating whether the next move is going to be a full percent. And not another 25 basis points like we seen last time. But I do think, you know, if you look at some of the drivers of inflation and what's been happening of late, I think the turning point is quite close.
That's a great point you make. I mean, I look at some of the drivers of it. You know, gas, which we would call petrol, in the U.S., in the data we're looking at for this period, was a big driver of inflation. But that's actually been coming down during July, and is the average is below $5. So in a lot of sense, maybe if this isn't the worst, we're very, very close to the top, because of course inflation needs to you know, those big prints need to keep coming, and at some point it kind of solves itself.
Yes, yeah. So if you think, you know, energy is up more than 40% over the last year. A lot of that came in the last bit since the war started.
Mm-hmm.
Gasoline up 60. That's for the year. But if you only look for the month, you know, gasoline was up another 11% in a month. That's a huge number.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, we know that recently the oil price started to slip, other food commodities as well, so that's a positive sign. That will only show up in inflation numbers in months to follow. But, you know, just think about it. Oil currently is sitting at about $100 per barrel. So if it stays around this level, we get to February next year, because February this year, when the war broke out, we went to 140.
Yeah, yeah.
That's already a 30% decline in energy, just from the base effect. So for us to see another 40% increase in energy, oil needs to go to 200, 220, which is currently very unlikely. So I think, you know, we're already seeing energy coming down, like I've mentioned, food commodities as well. And then as the base effect comes into the mix, I think next year inflation is going to decline quite sharply.
Which means, and I know that talk, I mean, suddenly late last night there was talk of, you know, the markets are pricing a 33% chance of a 1% rate increase when the Federal Open Monetary Committee meets in 2 weeks. That surely is not likely to happen. I mean, probably another 0.75% because of that base effect as you talk around. I mean, this is almost certainly, the numbers are scary, but this is probably inflation peaking.
Yes, I know. I think the Fed will take that into consideration and probably stick to 75 pips. If you also look at inflation expectations, you know, that is also coming down. It's still high. The Fed talks about getting inflation back to the target of, let's say, 2-2.5%. You know, they will start to take the foot off the accelerator when inflation starts moving into that direction, not only when it gets there.
Yeah, yeah.
So when we see inflation tipping over and starting to move lower, I think the Fed will take it a little bit slower, because obviously they want to keep the job market healthy and try and avoid an economic collapse, or like they say, engineer a soft landing. And that can very easily happen towards, you know, the end of this year, beginning of next year. And that kind of move is going to be quite positive for sentiment and markets overall.
And then in that scenario, and let's take that scenario where base effect starts to play and inflation starts coming down, Fed's done the increases, it's not at that 2-2.5, but it's heading in that direction. We suddenly in an environment where the conversation completely swings to, when does the Fed start cutting rates?
Yeah, I think, you know, I also, you know, although the Fed is not saying that, I think they will be comfortable with inflation going below 4% and staying, you know, below 4-3% for some time. They wanted inflation for 2 decades now to address the debt levels. So it's not only getting it back to 2.5%, but if they can manage it at a reasonable level, which is obviously much lower than the current 9 and a bit. They will probably be comfortable with that. And you're right, they could probably then start saying, well, we've done enough normalization and we can start to support the economy and the job market again.
Yeah, so in other words, this is not the 70s where things go crazy and out of control, and no one seemed in the 70s to be in control for a long time. Martin Ackerman, Chief Economist and Advisory Partner at Citadel, appreciate the early morning. And that's our question today on our LinkedIn and Twitter around that Fed decision when they got to, it's in 2 weeks' time. What do you think? I mean, do they need to do 1% or will 75 points do it, or perhaps you think actually even less will be enough?
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Elise Kruger, independent economist, talking the Banks of Africa Economic Transaction Index. Elise, appreciate the early morning time. Let's first kick off if you could give us a quick understanding of what the Banks of Africa Economic Transaction Index actually is and what it's looking at.
Morning, Simon. Yes, so it's actually a unique indicator looking at the value of all banking transactions in the economy, i.e. all debits and credits passing through the bank accounts of the broader population, both businesses and households. So banks serve as an intermediary, so the transactions between banks are recorded, and that is used as an indication of economic activity.
And in that sense, my novice economist hat says actually a really, really good indicator, because it's the core of an economy. It's money moving.
Absolutely. And over time, the BankServe BT Index, you know, has shown a good correlation with the GDP growth outcomes over time. So from that point of view, you know, it's encouraging to see that there's still a strong number in quarter two coming through in terms of banking transactions. Whereas, you know, if you just look at sales and production numbers out there, it feels like it's going to be a really bad quarter. But if you look at the transaction side of things, which are already actual data, then it seems like the economy might have been more resilient in quarter two than what is generally perceived.
Yeah, I mean, the Q1 GDP was modest but surprised to the upside. The BankServe index quarter for the second quarter was up 3.9%. I mean, that is a chunky number.
Yes, no, indeed. So, as I say, you know, it would be encouraging to see a further increase in quarter two. I do believe that we're going to see a positive number in quarter two for GDP. It might not be as strong as what the BT is suggesting, but I do not, looking at the BT data, it definitely signals that we're going to see growth and not a contraction in second quarter.
That all said, there are headwinds. I mean, this is obviously for Q2. This comes up to end of June. About a week before the end of June, stage 6 load shedding kicked in. We've got an MPC meeting next week, likely to ratchet up rates, maybe another quarter or half percent. Q2 might have been nice, but Q3 is perhaps proving tougher.
Absolutely. And I think the monthly change in the BT now in June does signal exactly that. So the monthly number dropped by 4.4%.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me is an early indication that there's strain out there which concerns, you know, the headwinds are gathering and that it's starting to impact, you know, on the actual transactions in the economy. So yes, I think quarter three is going to be difficult, given, you know, the high inflation, the high interest rate scenario. Global economy seems to be, you know, coming down maybe faster than expected, looking at the downward revisions from the IMF for the US and so on. So there's definitely some headwinds gathering for quarter three.
Yeah, it potentially a tough quarter, and as we say, I mean, the load shedding is still happening, and we'll wait what the Reserve Bank says next week. Is Kruger, independent economist, talking at BankServe Africa Economic Transactions Index. I got to say, I hadn't seen it before, and it's a great looking index, and I think it does, as Lise was saying, give us some really good insight, early insight into perhaps what GDP will be doing. That's it for today. We were chatting with Kian Yonyoma yesterday about energy prices. Energy generally, we touched on Renogen, we touched on Shell, Royal Shell as they call themselves. But particularly we asked you on our LinkedIn and Twitter, Brent. At that point it was a little below 100. In fact, it dropped yesterday down to $98 and some change. It's now just back above 100. We asked you, is the opportunity here, is the run in energy over? About 40% of you were saying, you know what, we just want cheaper petrol. Please just give us that cheaper petrol. The rest split fairly evenly between a sense that Brent is probably heading lower. Some say it will be bouncing higher. I got to say, I'm a bouncing higher part of the view, but I'm also talking my book. I am long Brent, so perhaps I've got that bias there. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast available just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Nicole Tetetso, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. We're going to be talking what does well in a high inflation environment.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.